Performance matters. And when you can get natural products to perform as good or better than those synthetic things, that's a win. And that's what Native deodorant does.
Native deodorant doesn't just block odor, it's made better. Native has ingredients that you've heard of like coconut oil, shea butter, and tapioca starch. It's also vegan and never tested on animals.
You know, I went back and looked at the deodorant I used to use before I converted over. And I looked and I saw that it had aluminum as one of the main ingredients. In fact, it had 17.8% of aluminum in this deodorant. Why should you be worried about aluminum? It plugs your sweat glands. That's not what we want. We want our sweat glands to be unplugged and do what they're supposed to do.
You need to get rid of toxins out of your body, and the body uses those glands to move that through. So why block them? And you know what my favorite one is, Scott? My favorite one is coconut and vanilla. I love that scent. It smells better than sweat, I'll tell you that.
If you haven't tried Native, you can do that and get 20% off your first order if you go to nativedeo.com/trail. That's nativedeo.com/trail. You can get 20% off your first order.
Hey, Scott, we're here with Rob Steger from Training for Ultra. You may know that podcast. I certainly do. And he has put together a new documentary on called Running the Triple Crown. It's about putting three 200-mile races together, and he filmed it, and he shares with us, and it's about to get released. Rob, welcome.
Thanks for having me. Honored to be on your show.
Is this film available now? Where can we see it?
It will be released on Amazon shortly. We're going to have 6 episodes. I think we're charging like 99 cents a piece so that we can pay for Ryan Clayton's time and flying out to each race and living in a car, basically, to record a lot of this.
Tell me, was it harder to put together the documentary or harder to run the Triple Crown?
I haven't been asked that question. It's a good one. I think having Ryan Clayton do most of the production after the facts really helped.
And we also share in a partner. You brought along Exoskin with you. They helped sponsor this documentary and were one of your key pieces of gear to complete these things. Why choose Exoskin? How did it help you?
So I was really skeptical in 2018. I was running Moab 240 for the first time, and Croy from their team reached out and offered to, you know, send me a pair of socks to try out. And they were really thin. And I was like, toe socks. I love toe socks, but these are probably too thin. And then testing them out, I was kind of blown away. And then I went for it, ran Moab 240 in 18 with them and didn't have a single blister.
Wow.
And that was a slow race for me. I think it took 96 hours on my feet running or throughout the entire race. And ended, I think I had one tiny blister that we taped over real early on. It was caused by the sand that got in my shoes. Afterwards, looking at my feet, my jaw dropped and I was totally sold on it. I haven't worn a different pair of running socks ever since. I think I still wear the same pair of socks that Exoskin gave me for the first round of Moab today, and the same pair of calf sleeves. And I really like their base layers. They're compression bottoms I wear on recovery. I don't run in those. And then their shirts, I love the long sleeve kind of compression feel to them. And they're really breathable. I could wear them at the hottest points of the hottest races. And they're all black and they're still so breathable. You know, my feet throughout the triple, I think, was proof that they had something. They have a technology that works. At least for me, I'm sold on it.
Well, they've supported you on the runs and they supported you on this documentary, and we certainly want to support them as well and support your documentary. And we can find that. Scott will have a link in this podcast to be able to get there. And we look forward to seeing how the story ends.
Honored to be on your guys' show. Thanks for having me.
Thanks, Rob.
And you can catch Rob at Training for Ultra. He's got a great podcast and a great lineup of people. As you scroll through, you'll recognize a lot of the names and you'll enjoy listening. So thanks for doing that for the community, Rob. Really appreciate it.
Yeah, thanks, guys.
All right. We ready?
Yeah.
Poor, miserable me. I'm having cramps. And this person over here is flying by me.
Yeah.
You're recording this, aren't you, Freeman?
I get everything. All right. We ready?
Yeah.
Welcome to another edition of Trail Runner Nation. My name's Scott Warr.
And I'm Don Freeman. Scott, kick us off.
I just did.
Oh, well, kick it again.
Aren't you going to make your introductions?
This is the podcast right before the big run, the one we've been talking about, the True Form Runner Challenge, and I'm just giddy.
Well, let's tell people, if they haven't been listening to the middle sections of our podcast the last 10 weeks, what is the True Form Challenge?
True Form Challenge is where I got myself in a bit of a bind. I accepted from couch, and literally couch, to a 100-mile run in 8 short weeks of training, primarily on a treadmill. So you might think, maybe not the best idea. So what should you do? You should call your best friends that you know that are tough, that are rugged, that are dependable, that will carry your behind through this race.
Literally.
If you have a problem. So I reached out to Terry Fletcher, who is on the call with us here, and to Brian Contosh, who's known as Tosh. And so we've had both these guys on the podcast before, and they've decided, yeah, Don, we feel sorry for you for getting yourself in this bind, and we'll go out there and help you. So we're going to run from Squaw Valley up in the Sierra Nevadas, the Western States course, and so we're going to see it in real time here on July 20th.
And we thought it would be a good idea to get Tosh and Terry's opinion on, did they really get roped into this, or is this something you really wanted to do?
Hey, wait, can I reach in there and just say, here was my text to these guys. Hey, I've got a challenge. You guys in? And the answer with both of them was yes before they even heard the challenge. So that's what kind of friends they are. So now you guys can answer the question. I'll get out of the way.
Go ahead, Terry.
Well, obviously it was a yes for me. kind of a no-brainer running with both these guys out at, Don for Tahoe and Bigfoot, and then Tosh out at Tahoe. Yeah, it's kind of a no-brainer no matter what it was. It's been a while since we've all got together, so always good to get out for an adventure.
Yeah, same thing. You know, Don sent a text, and I just, I'll do it. Let's just figure out when we can do it. You know, and always looking to do exciting stuff. It's always a good time with Don and these guys. So
this is what I heard, Don. Terry saying, yeah, I haven't seen these guys for a while. I'll go run 100 miles with them. And Tosh's answer is, yeah, why wouldn't we do this? That's stupid. Why are we even talking about this? Of course we would do this.
So thanks, guys. Thanks for joining me on this thing. And thanks for not asking any questions about it and just agreeing to do it. And for that, I'll agree to do anything you propose to me in the future. Just hands down, yes. Plan it. I'm there. So let's kick this discussion off. I have 3 great topics to talk about. You know, we've got 100 miles to run. No matter how many you've run, 1, 0, or, many, you're always faced with the same thing. How is the day going to roll out? What's going to happen? And if you don't have respect for the trail, it can hammer you. That it's 100 miles. It's through the mountain. There's a lot of heat out there. There's a lot of variables. And I'm going to bring up something that I think Tosh will have him lead off on this, because it's exactly his terminology. It's his phrasing. And I want to dig in a bit into this conversation. And Tosh, you're going to run with this. The mind's mind. What is, and Tosh has a great podcast, The Crooked Butterfly. Listen to it, enjoy it, crawl into Tosh's mind and go for a 30-minute or so ride with him of what he's contemplating. But one of the things that he talks about is the mind's mind. What is the mind's mind?
It's that uncontrollable voice, you know. So many people talk about, you know, the voices in your head and mental toughness and mind over matter. And that's all great. And you can manage, you know, and you can have strategies to manage that voice. You can even change that voice's narrative. But the mind's mind, you can't. You just need to know that it's there, and you need to be able to know and recognize when it's talking so it doesn't trick you. And it's just... I don't, you know, it's this little thing inside of you that it just talks to you and says, why are you doing this? And you know, you're aware of that conversation, but why am I feet hurt? Why do I keep punishing myself? Let me change the goals, or, oh, I reached a goal, or, oh, this is good enough, or, you know, whatever it is. And, you know, there's lots of strategies to control that voice when it comes up, but that's controlling something that you can control. The mind's mind is just a step beyond that. It's spooky. You don't even know what it's saying, but it's affecting you. You just have to be aware of what it's affecting and say, oh, that must be the mind's mind trying to play tricks on me. And then you just have to ignore it.
Can you control it? Can you control the mind's mind? Can you control that dialogue?
I don't believe so. I don't believe you can control that. I think you need to, because if you can control it, it's not the mind's mind. That's your mind. You control your mind. But that mind's mind's not yours to control. And it's going to be talking to your mind, and it's going to be talking to your body. And you just have to know when it's speaking, and you have to know, and you have to be hearing something, and you might not be able to put your finger on it. And then you just have to say, okay, hey, cool. Like, let's ignore that, and let's get back into my basics. Let's get back into my steps. Let's check in with my toes. Let's check in with my feet. Let's do a body scan. I'm getting ready to present through my business enterprise, checking in with the left hand. Maybe we'll talk about that on the course. But I've come up with this thing called checking in with your left hand.
Yeah.
And it goes through five things that allows you to, when the mind's mind is starting to affect you, it's like, okay, hey, well, what can I control? 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5. And usually 2 or 3 of those things will push that mind's mind away for a little bit further. And then you check back in with that left hand every now and then when you're starting to feel a little woozy, a little tired, a little sorry for yourself, a little hot, a little hungry, a little weak.
I love that. And I'm just curious, all three of you have run 200-mile races. I mean, that is tough. And here is just this scrawny little 100-mile race through some pine trees and across some nice brooks with some fish swimming in them. Do you guys anticipate the mind's mind affecting you? I mean, do you expect to have a rough time, or is this just going to be a family reunion skipping down the trail to grandmother's house?
Terry, why don't you pick up on that?
No, I think we'll definitely hit that at some point. And I think deep inside, that's the reason why all of us are probably doing this. If you want to get us together to go for a walk through the park out in California, I'm not sure all of us would have been so eager to jump on this. But while checking with the mind's mind, I think we can't rely on some of the races or events we've done in the past. I think it's important to keep ourselves in check by doing something like this every once in a while to check back in with those feelings and kind of see where we're at and get a better hold of things that way.
I'm going to ask you, Tosh, do you think the mind's mind works against you, or it can work for you? Is your mind's mind an asset, or is it something that could take you out of the run?
You know, that's interesting, Don, because I always flip the coin over and check the opposite side of the coin, and I haven't done it yet with my thoughts on the mind's mind. So you just poked me to gauge there. But the mind's mind that I'm talking about is always against you. Always against you. And he's a tricky little bastard too, you know? And so you just got to get wise to his tricks. And you know, a lot like Terry's saying, like, yeah, okay, so it's only 100 miles. You know, I told my wife, I said, oh, I'm going to go, I got to fly out to Sacramento and meet Don, Trail Runner Nation guy, and we're going to run. Oh, really? You're doing that? Like, how far is this one? I'm like, it's 100 miles. She's like, oh, it's only 100 miles. I'm like, aha.
Yeah.
You didn't even know it, but out of my mouth came, it's only 100 miles. It's like, there's the mind's mind putting a word in there that doesn't belong. And that the experience is going to present something to us. And who knows what it's going to be. And we'll just tackle that challenge when it comes, you know, and it's going to be good. It's going to be exciting.
Yeah, that's, you know, I'm anticipating some struggle, right? And so is Terry. That's what he said. If it was just a walk through the park, probably wouldn't come out and see you, Don. I like you enough to come out and walk through a park, but I want to get out there and come out there and be challenged. And there's no doubt we're going to be challenged at different times through this race or through this run or through this event. So I'm going to ask you this. You know, during a normal, say if this was a regular Western States year and we all showed up with a bib, we'd you know, give a high five on at the start line, and we just see how it rolled out. So how do you see this event or this run or this adventure going? Do you see us sticking together? And we haven't talked about this. Do you see us sticking together, or are we just going to let it just happen as it happens? What are your guys' thoughts?
I think that's something we'd probably have to discuss. Probably will happen early on. We'll probably be together for a while at the beginning, I would imagine. And then I guess we'll kind of see how things play out. I guess we can discuss this. If we all want to stick together, then we can just say we're going to stick together no matter what. Otherwise, just see how things shake out.
There's going to be some times that Tosh is feeling strong, that Terry is. You know, I asked Terry, I said, how's your fitness, Terry? Not that I was worried about him. And I said, how's your fitness? His answer, I haven't stopped training. So, okay, that explained it to me, because last time I saw him was at a 200-mile run. And it's, if he hasn't stopped training, he's in shape. So there's going to be times that I'm struggling, you guys are feeling good, and you flip the coin. There's always going to be somebody that's going through something. And that's the time that we have to decide, do we stick together? Do we pull back? Do we help one another pull through this thing? Or are we going to be a team? And that's interesting to me. I guess we'll see, like you said, Terry, we'll see how we're feeling as we're rolling through.
Yeah, I'm with Terry too, you know. Same with you, Don. Like, I have no desire to go out there and break myself and try to prove anything to anybody. I'm excited just to have been invited. I'm excited to be on the storied Western States Trail. You know, this is something that we talked about when we were doing the Tahoe 200. Oh, wow. Because, you know, you share a little part of that trail for a while. I was like, wow, that'd be really cool. And the Western States run was something, 5 years ago or so, I called a buddy, Mossy Smith, up and said, hey, I want to get my name in the lottery for that. I think this is a really good marker to do. And, you know, after a couple years of applying and not getting accepted, go figure, it drifted out of my targets as something that I wanted to do. And then all of a sudden you text, 2 months ago, month and a half ago, and said, hey, you want to do it? And I was like,
yeah,
wow, sure, why not? And so.
How have you guys approached this differently than you would a race, a sanctioned, organized race?
Well, I haven't, you know, and I don't want to sound cavalier, because I'm protecting myself against that. But, you know, I haven't really done much. I've been super, super busy with a nonprofit that I've been energizing here moving forward, trying to keep my business afloat as well during these hard times with the virus. The CrossFit community has been in an uproar lately. And, you know, my wife is a significant fixture in that community, so supporting her. And but I haven't done any training really. You know, I've logged maybe 100 miles on that True Form when I did the last fundraiser event. But I haven't been really working out, but I live an active lifestyle. So I'm just kind of relying on that. But in back to your question, I don't really, you know, I've never really entered a race anyways to say, hey, I want to win or I want to come in a top 10. You know, I've set some goals for me, but it's more for me about to enjoy the experience and face the challenges that the event's going to provide and just kind of enjoy it. You know, that's why I do these things, is to enjoy the experience and then test my margins as they unfold in my regular ready state. So, you know, that said, we'll see what happens here for this run.
How about you, Terry?
I guess I'm along the same lines of Tosh there. Haven't really trained specifically for this, just kind of kept up my normal routine. The bigger difference for this one is just the kind of the time frame, where it's relatively short notice of when this is going to happen, as compared to, at least for me, when I normally sign up for an event, it's months in advance. And so for me, the mental preparation has been a little different as far as visualizing what's going to happen. And for this, it's kind of nice. It's a bit of an unknown for me. I'm not very familiar with the course or kind of what the setup is for this. So for me, the unknown of that is kind of exciting. And the more you do events, the longer distance stuff, you kind of know the game, you know the mental challenges, the mental battles that are going to happen. So it helps be familiar with that and be familiar with some of the things you're going to be feeling. And it's just a matter of tackling those things when we're actually out there.
Yeah, probably full disclosure, I knew about this about 3 months before I called you guys. No, I'm just kidding.
Actually, you didn't. This came together, and I think you sent the invitation within 2 or 3 days, right?
Oh yeah, yeah. I wanted to get these guys committed, let them know as soon as I knew, and to get my head wrapped around who I was going down this trail with. So I'm just really happy that these guys said yes.
Hey Terry, I'm curious. I want to tap into that part that you just said there, that, you know, getting your mind wrapped around this. You know what is going to happen. And this probably goes back to what Tosh was talking about, the mind's mind. You guys have a lot of experience doing tough things where the mind's mind is probably screaming a lot louder and telling you that you should quit and telling all those negative things like Tosh was saying. What strategies do you use to quiet that voice or put that voice out of contention of your attention?
I guess for me, it changes at different times. Sometimes it's nice to be able to just sort of shut your mind off and just kind of know that, all right, I'm just going to put my head down and just go and get through it, just kind of relying on those past experiences of, all right, I've been through this before. I know that I can just kind of put my head down and get through this. Other times, kind of depending on what you're facing mentally, it's nice to face those things. I think a lot of people that do events like this might have some demons deep inside that maybe they're trying to work through. And if that's what one of the things is that pops up, sometimes it's nice to face those things during those times. If it's during the middle of the night when you're starting to get loopy or falling asleep, whatever, or you're tired, it's nice to face those things. And in a setting like this, I'm not sure there's many better places to do it than up in the mountains and kind of by yourself.
Yeah, and I've seen Terry on the 200-mile run. Well, we spent a lot of miles together, and his inner thighs were so chafed. He looked like he was riding a horse as he was running. It was just, he couldn't get his legs any further apart as he ran. And then when you looked at his face, I don't know how he got this, but his lips were so chapped and so and they were bleeding. Literally, there was blood from his lips. But Terry doesn't complain at all. He just does it. He has that mental toughness. And that's my next question. Do you guys feel like if you're going to rely on something, you got to get through this 100 miles and, you know, only 100. Yeah, 100 can take you out. 100 miles. Do you think that you will rely more on your physical ability or your mental ability? And when I say mental, I'm talking about decision-making process and also about your toughness or your determination. That's kind of the mental side. You know, you have to be a thinker and you have to be tough versus your physical, which just is your guts, and you'll be able to get out there and just grind it out and just rely on your physical body. What do you think? And I'll start with you, Tosh. Do you think you will come in saying, I rely more on my physical or my mental side?
Yeah, that's a great question, Don. And I think for this event, I'm totally relying on my mental game.
Yeah,
and you know, leveraging the experiences that we've had, or leveraging the experiences I've had through my racing, you know, is really how I'm going into this one. I haven't physically trained for it. I'm a little heavy right now, and no problem. You know, haven't been really training for elevation climbs and descents. You sent me those really funky shoes that I'm going to wear for the very first time, and we'll get those things working for me, and we're just going to make it happen. You know, so. The mental piece for this one for me, for sure.
Good. Hey, I'm gonna build on that too. And Terry, you're up next on this. But those funky shoes are the Hoka 10 nines, and people have seen them. That big tail on the back end. Scott, you had your first run in a pair the other day, and you were flabbergasted at the way they performed. You know, just going downhill, really, really strange how they work. What was your first impression of those, Scott? And then I want to talk about more mental toughness and physical stuff with you, Terry.
Yeah, let's hear Terry first, and then I'll jump in with some 10-9.
Yeah.
Definitely going to rely more on the mental game for this one. I mean, haven't done a whole lot of preparation or anything like that. I think the heat with this one is going to be different for me. I haven't done any events in the heat like this, so... I don't want to say it's only 100 miles, but after going through some of these things, it's almost a bad thing knowing that most of this stuff is just mental and that you can push through it. So I think the worst comes to worst, we're just gonna keep trudging ahead and we'll get there.
Yeah, you know, I'm in agreement with you guys. I think it is a mental game. I think most of the people that show up at the start line have the ability to get to the finish line. And I think it's the decision making that they roll out through the process of starting too fast, of not eating, of not managing the heat, of not watching the climbs, or we're not bombing the downs, doing things to sabotage their own journey. And I think that the three of us have enough experience to have sabotaged ourselves enough to avoid those. And as I told Terry, I said, we're going to do a 100-mile run with the 200-mile mentality. We're going to go out there and just kind of roll it out and be surprised when the race is half done and they're going to say, we're finished. So, I'm not going in there with, I'm going to run 100 and then I'm done. I've got to just have enough to get to the end. I'm going to pretend myself as this is a out and back, a full 200. And so if I set my mind to that, I think I'm in a lot better shape, because as you know, point A to B, you'll be tired by the time you get to B, but I'm going to plug in, another destination so that I manage myself appropriately through this, 24, 30 plus hours that we run.
I don't know. I heard you just say that we're going to go out and back, which I'm excited because you just upped the ante. Why wouldn't we? We're already there. We're already there. And if we're going to do it, might as well, let's just go big. You know what I mean?
This is my run. You organize that next one. All right.
One thing I will say is, it's been really neat. Don, I haven't spent any time thinking about this. Haven't looked at the race course.
Good.
I haven't really asked any questions or anything. I'm always like a hands-on dork out, looking at elevation profiles, planning, doing a lot of planning, especially for the 200s.
Yeah.
You're foolish not to. And I'm having at least a baseline strategy that you can deviate from deliberately, or if events deviate you, at least you have a frame of reference for what the second order effects are, third order effects are. And for this one, I'm literally showing up at the airport. You said, hey, just get to Sacramento. I got the rest.
Yeah.
And it's going to be kind of interesting for me because I'm not that way. So that'll be a really cool test, is just whatever shows up at an aid station, whatever shows up on the course, whatever hill shows up, whenever it shows up, I'm going to resource that mental toughness and those experiences to take it from there. So I really appreciate you doing that for me and Terry as well.
Right on.
Anyways,
Scott. I've been enjoying the group text that this group has been on, and I loved what you just said, Tosh, because we did have a fourth person that was going to be running with us, that Andy Jones Wilkins, who unfortunately decided just a couple days ago that he probably should not be running because he's having a little IT band issue, which is a very, very smart and wise decision on his part. But he was the one with most of the questions. Hey, what's going to happen between here and here? How are we going to get across the river? What does the trail look between this aid station and this aid station? Are we going to be able to get through? And because he knows the course, he's run this course 10 times. He knows it better than he knows the walk between his kitchen and his bedroom. But he's the one that had most of the questions, where the questions I've heard from Terry and Tosh are, okay, yeah, when we starting? What day?
what's the address of the place I'm supposed to sleep the night before? And here's Tosh. Yeah, I can fly in at 9:30. Tosh, the trip up to the start is like 2.5 hours, and we're gonna get up at 4. So you'll only get a few hours sleep. And he goes, yep, I can do that, no problem. And I'm thinking, all right, this guy's coming on with guts. He's just coming in and he's gonna roll this thing out and get it done. So I'm excited to run with him. And I need that actually. I was kind of happy to hear that he would be low on sleep, and I'm hoping something happens. Maybe Terry forgets to bring something that's critical. I need some help with these guys because they're strong.
Well, with Jeff Vernon being crewing and being at that bunk up in Squab, we'll probably be drunk the night before too. So we'll be pulling an all-nighter and have 30 beers in us before the race start.
Hey, well, tell us about Jeff Vernon, would you? Because he initiated a lot of this stuff from the podcast with Mark Cugazzella, that we said, hey, do you think you could run a marathon if you trained exclusively on a true form runner? And then he called and said, hey, I challenge you to do that. And I declined because marathons are too hard. And somehow it escalated to a 100-mile run, which I don't quite understand, but that's okay. And so who is Jeff, and what do you expect from Jeff? Because he's one of the main crew people. Do you think he'll show up at these crew spots?
Yeah, I've known Jeff for quite a while now. interesting story. I met Jeff the first time he rolled up to our house here in Boulder up in the mountains to drop a Trueform off because Dave Castro said, hey, take Tosh yeah. Trueform. So Jeff was like, okay. So he drove halfway across country and showed up at the house. First time I met him, big, big, tall, large, loud, an amazing, amazing heart and super sensitive. And we spent a couple hours together. We went back down the hill. I bought him a burger. And next thing you know, I'm walking out of Safeway and his truck's on fire in the parking lot of Safeway. And I'm like, dude, what's going on here, man? You need some help? He's like, yeah, I got to deliver these two machines, you know, something, something. So we formed a loose friendship there. And when I went to run the Tahoe Trail, Candace's Tahoe 200, I just called Jeff and said, hey, I need somebody to meet me in Tahoe to crew. You want to do it? And he said, yep. And he just showed up, picked me up at the airport, and we went. And since then, he had did a fabulous job crewing. That was his first time ever crewing for something, let alone a 200 miler with the things that are involved there. And I went to Moab the next year and said, hey, Jeff, like, let's just do it again. So he did Moab and crewed for me. He was up here at the house for the Big Fish Foundation's inaugural fundraiser and brought his wife and two sons in and basically just ran all the support and logistics on the Trueform side and the production side. So, I mean, he's an amazing, generous, beautiful person. So he's going to be a great asset to have out there because he's done this for me in the past. And so he knows kind of what I need or whatnot. He knows how to get from checkpoint to checkpoint. He'll usually show up, you know, a couple bottles of wine deep. And the longer the race goes, the more wine he has in him. But that's what's so exciting because you never know what you're going to get.
Hey, Tosh, you kind of glossed over a very important part of that story. His truck was on fire?
It'll be exciting. Yeah, his truck was on fire.
I'm glad he didn't pour the wine on it because I think there's some alcohol in there. It made it flirt up a bit.
Yeah. No kidding. Yeah, he's a great man. I'm excited for you. In fact, you guys and I were doing a podcast one night, late at night, and he was actually driving through town and he texted me, hey, I'm coming. I'm like, yeah, come on up to the house. And he had no idea, but we were halfway into our podcast at the time. And he rolled in. I think the dogs went crazy. And I said, hey, Jeff, sit down here, grab a mic. And he piggybacked into there. So I think that was your first introduction to Jeff. But he's co-owner of Trueform Running, the non-motorized treadmill, and I've been a fan of it ever since he dropped it off to run on it because it really teaches you through – he's not going to like me saying this, but I like it because I'm a big negative reinforcement kind of guy. And when you don't run properly on the Trueform runner, it punishes you. It creates excess fatigue. So in a way, it's teaching you to run correctly or else. And there's other uses for it too, obviously to correct and have proper run posture and work with people. So and it's a great tool. Yeah, I've been a big fan of that that non-motorized treadmill since he dropped it off. I've logged
and Tosh, and this is what we talk about on the run, and we might talk about it again because we're going to spend a lot of time together, I hope, out there, is that you really learn to become efficient. You learn to use muscles to move you forward. And so when I'm on the trail and I start thinking about my gait cycle on the Trueform and I bring that same gait cycle to the trail, all of a sudden I just start moving and all my muscles move me forward instead of having just random, you know, energy expenditure that doesn't move me forward. I just feel so much more efficient. When you come out, Terry, you'll get on this thing and give it a go. We should probably do it before the run so you at least have some body mechanics because I think after the run, it's going to take a day or two for you to feel normal. But it's really an engaging, fun unit to help you learn and think about your gait. And you can even after one session on it, when we're out there running, you can apply that from that one session that we do. It's really, I see you shaking your head, Tosh. It's true. You learn about running. As I said to Scott, I've run for 20 years and I've never had this kind of lesson. I've never had this feeling before. This is really exciting that it's changed my gait like this. And, you know, it made me happy that I was accepted the challenge and got a Trueform.
And I'll jump in here. We were just, Don and I were on a run. And we were running together, which means he was really dialing it back about 95%. And he was, we were talking about the, his running gait and how it's changed. And he says, he said, okay, this is how I used to run. And now I'm going to run the way that the true form runner has taught me to run. And he all of a sudden just accelerated. And I asked him, I said, so were you consciously trying to accelerate? Is it harder to run? And he goes, no, it's the same effort, but there's more energy and more efficiency put into that. So I'm actually running faster. And it was, I actually tried to video it, but it didn't come across real well.
It's because I left him too quick. I saw the video. It's just I was became tiny real quick.
I didn't
have a
Zoom.
That's the reason it didn't
I didn't have a
Zoom.
Yeah. No, it's true. It teaches you to use your body as a system. And, you know, that's one of the things that you check in with yourself when you're starting to get fatigued out there and you're starting to question things or you're getting hot or whatever. It's like, hey, what can I control right now? Well, my posture, my technique, you know, the simple running mechanics. And if you just, okay, and you'd be surprised, your hunger will go away, your headache will go away, your heat will go, because you'll be focused on then running efficiency, running technique. You'll perform better. You'll induce then less fatigue into your body. And it takes your head off of this extra stuff that you don't need to be stressing about. And it's good because, you know, when you start rounding your shoulders and hunching forward, it's putting excessive, you know, wear on your lower back and your quads. And it's just a cascading effect once you let that posture deviate from premium, you know.
And I wanted to follow up on that statement, Tosh. When I get out there and I start to get a little bit tired, my feet are hot, I get a blister form, you know, just whatever. You name the thing. We all get the things, and our bodies are good at finding the things to try to take us out. And I just dial back into that normal gait or that gait feeling or using the muscles to propel me forward. All of a sudden, my whole mindset changes. All of a sudden, I become a mover and a traveler instead of a complainer. And it's just because I start thinking about, how does it feel when I'm on the treadmill? How do I move that belt? How can I move myself in a similar fashion on this trail? And all of a sudden, I'm distracted. You know, like when you're trying to adjust your MP3 player and you've got some stuff going on, your stomach's bothering, your hip hurt, you know, you name the stuff that goes on when you run. And all of a sudden, you're fiddling around trying to find the song to make it go. You're distracted. You start losing all those complaints because you're focused on something else. And that same focus moves to your gait instead of the things that were trying to sabotage you and bother you. So, yeah, I agree with you. Gait's huge, and it's a good vehicle to move you out of that. So go ahead, Scott. Did you have something? Because I have my third spot to talk to these guys about.
Well, let's close with that third. But this is a question I had. This group is a tough group. No doubt about it. But there is a little bit of an age difference. And
some of us are too young.
In fact, Don,
some of us are too young.
Don just reminded me that Terry is exactly half of his age. So he's the young buck coming in here. I want to know, just for my own personal, and maybe there's some good information that can translate to the rest of the listeners. What is your normal training routine, all three of you? And Don, we're going to say training after you decided to throw away the Nutella.
okay.
I was impressed with Terry's answer. You haven't stopped training. What is your typical week look like? What kind of training do you do?
Doesn't look like a typical runner's training. Normally it's two workouts a day. 7 days a week. Never take days off. If I'm training for a race, it's maybe running a couple miles a day with weight training and some stretching. And then on the weekends, doing longer stuff, longer runs and workouts. Otherwise for this, I was getting into some longer distance biking a month or two ago, getting ready for some other races. And then, when I started getting ready for this, it was just, easing back on the miles. I did a Midwest States 100 virtual run at the end of June. So that was just 10 miles a day for 10 days. But that was the most miles I've done in a long time. So backed off the running after that. This past week, it was maybe a mile in the morning with some stretching, and then maybe some light weight training in the evening with maybe another run. But that's about it.
Hmm. No rest days comes from the 28-year-old. Just want to put the record out there. The 28-year-old can train 7 days a week, always with no rest days. Tosh, what about you? You said you're pretty busy right now, but what is your active lifestyle training routine look like?
I'm still stuck on 28 years old because I'm trying to do the math real quick. I'm getting my calculator off to figure out how old Don is. last 6 weeks or so, I've done maybe 3 workouts. I've run a total of 2 miles maybe, and that's about it.
Oh, no.
I'm just, no excuse. I'm in a little bit of a downslide, recycle, getting ready for hunting season. Had a big fundraiser, working hard, grinding on the computer, unfortunately. But my active day, though, is I take the dogs for a walk. We live in the mountains, so I take the dogs for a mile or two, just a walk, I work around the yard a lot, so a lot of manual labor, shovels, picks, moving rocks, chainsawing wood, stuff like that. So, an active lifestyle, I'll put like 3-4 hours of yard work in a day. But that's about it. When I'm in a good place, I found that, when I'm trying to balance everything that's going on in my life, I used to work out a lot like Terry, but now if I do a CrossFit workout, 3 times a week at, decent intensity, not all out, that's typically it. And combine that with my, my yard work and walking the dogs. That's about what a training routine looks for me. I kind of have an approach where I look at all my previous races or all my previous events or endeavors. Those are every time I do like this is a going out here with you guys for 100 miles. This is a training event. This is part of my training, and it'll pay forward later, less in the physical sense, more in the mental, but if I were really getting ready to do an event that I had planned out for 6 months, 8 months, I would probably do some specific training and some stuff more along the lines of,
I have to say Tosh doesn't, he doesn't tell a story very well, because I remember it was either I was listening to your podcast or I watched a video or something. I can't even remember where I remember this, but one day you decided I'm going to go chop down and harvest a tree with an axe. No saws, just an axe. That was your yard work for the day. So when he says, oh, I'm just piddling around the house doing yard work, it's not like I go out and I pull some weeds in the flower bed. Tasha's going out and chopping down a 24-inch diameter tree by hand with a dull axe and then chopping and then hauling it back home. tell me a little bit. Am I right on that? Yeah, or did I dream that?
I did that. We were testing some things, exploring some margins of whatnot. And we produced a video called The Hard Way. You can check that out on the social media stuff. And, I think it was a 27-inch diameter tree, and, it took 24 hours nonstop work to, fell it and then quarter it up, round it out into sizes where I could either roll it or flip it or drag it, back about a half mile back to the house, between a quarter and a half mile back to the house each trip. So I just needed to test my spirit.
That's yard work.
I needed to test my resiliency and do something that was hard. Doing hard shit's good for the soul.
And then he just does the Big Fish Foundation, Last Man Standing. Tell us about that, Tosh. So when we hear that Tosh takes his dog for a walk and makes sure that he carries both bags out to the trash at a time, he's done a lot of stuff. Tosh, what was Big Fish Foundation, Last Man Standing? What was that about?
Yeah, we launched a fundraiser for veterans focused on trying to prehab against suicide. And, due to the COVID and whatnot and the state of the world, we had to push kind of launching the foundation for a while. And about 6 weeks ago now, I think we did it. I brought in some players. Some big names in the fitness industry, Josh Bridges, James Hobart, Krista Mayfield, Mossy Smith was there, another client of mine that I work on with mental toughness and framing. And we basically did 2.5 miles every hour, alternating between the TRUFORM runner and then three laps around this trail that I've cut in the yard, which is 2.5 miles. And then on your downtime, each hour before the next hour starts, you can get as many reps as body weight bench press as you can, or rest, relax, sleep, eat, and do whatnot. And the thing was, no time limit, just keep going until the last man standing. And so we did that.
And then a 30K on the treadmill, or a 50K. It was a 50K on the treadmill, 6+ hours constant running on the TRUFORM. And it's the same TRUFORM that Tosh put himself in a sealed shipping container without any external stimuli, no clocks, no music, no watch, nothing except we'll open the door in 24 hours, run as far as you can. And he ran 89 miles and won the competition. So, you know, I think he's downplaying a bit of his preparedness or what he does. And I don't mean that anything negative. One tough guy. Terry, you were going to say something, and then Scott said something. What were you going to say?
I think I was just going to kind of add that something Tosh was saying about how this is going to maybe help train us for the future. I like how this is something different than from what we're used to doing as far as training for an event and going into it with it all well planned out. As far as we know exactly what we're going to do, we have everything planned and prepared. Whereas this going into it kind of blind and unprepared in a sense, I think will make us better prepared for future events where we know, all right, I got this. If I can go out and run 100 miles without really training or being prepared for it, I think it'll just make us that much better for the future, which I think for the mental aspect of it is going to pay off in dividends. Mm,
good.
Hey, Don, you need to answer my question. What is your training look like normally?
Normally before this or because of this?
Let's say because of this.
So the TRUFORM became my new best friend and put it out on the deck, put it in the heat because I knew I needed to eliminate that one variable. Heat can take you out. You can be a trained cardiovascular animal, but if heat shows up and you didn't prepare for it, you're done. So I needed to make sure that I was at least heat prepped. And then I knew that I needed to just get the miles in. I needed the confidence because what these guys have alluded to is it's the mental game. If you show up in shape and you make the right decisions and you have some toughness, we'll get through this. It's just 10 mile runs. We're going to get through it. And so I just needed to make sure that I was satisfied with the work that I was doing, that I knew that I put my homework in. So then when I show up, I had confidence and I didn't want to get to mile 12 and go, ooh, I didn't do my work. So I did my work. I worked out, you know, 5 days a week and did stuff.
Yeah. What did that work look like? I mean, are we talking 100 mile weeks?
Oh, no,
what are we talking?
I was, you know, treadmilling it. I did my longest on the TRUFORM of a couple hours, 2.5 hours is my, I did some of those, some long ones. I made sure I did at least a minimum of an hour on it. And then my longest trail run was 25 miles out in Marin, out through the mountains. And then, you know, in that range. So that was my longest. So I knew, and I've had enough history where I've run 100 miles on a 15-mile long run. I've run 200 miles on a 30-mile long run. So I felt comfortable, and I feel confident. So I'm rolling in a good spot. So I feel good about my preparation. Okay, ready for third question? Guys, one of my favorite topics, you know, and we can go on this more on the run, if we need to. But as Scott knows, one of my favorite topics is fuse. And you know what a fuse is? Because it breaks when there's too much current or voltage or amperage. And I don't know that stuff. I didn't pass that class. But I know a fuse pops when it gets a little hot in that wire, right? And so we all have a fuse in our brain where all of a sudden we stop running. Or all of a sudden we go, enough of this. This is just stupid. That's the fuse that pops. Are you happy with your fuse? Terry, you're smart. Oh, go ahead, Tosh. You started. You're not happy with the fuse?
No.
Mm.
No.
Ooh.
That's why we do these things, because we're not happy with our fuse. That's why we constantly looking to see when it's going to trip, and we get excited when it trips. because it frames our mind for, okay, how can I put a bigger fuse in there, or how can I reduce the current, or whatever it is to extend my culminating point. So I think for me, absolutely not happy with my fuse. I've got a robust fuse at my state of the game right now in my life, but that's due to succumbing before two events and having my fuse pop, but also exposing myself to harder and harder and ever increasing. And you don't get a fuse. You don't get the best fuse that's appropriate in just like a short time. This has been years and years and years and years of building up. And so just being patient with it. And so while I'm proud of it, I'm not happy that it's where it needs to be yet. And I'm constantly trying to find out how I can put a bigger one in there.
How about you, Terry? Do you like your fuse?
I think it's not whether I like it or not like it. It's just a matter of knowing that it's there and doing events like this to find it and expose it. And then once that fuse does pop, kind of seeing, gauging how you react to it. And then afterwards, kind of looking back and looking at those different situations. And in a 100-mile event, I'm sure we'll hit those a few times. And then it's different than a 200-mile where you're going to hit those a number of times. It's just a matter of getting through them and working through it. And that's one of those things where afterwards, looking back, you use those things to learn from. You learn a lot about yourself.
So Terry, you're expecting the fuse to be blown, right?
Yep.
Would you take the fuse out and put a new one in? You have one in your back pocket. How do you repair the fuse? You take some aluminum foil and twist it up and shove it in there?
You figure those things out as they happen. It's something you can't really prepare for. You just kind of, when it happens, it happens, and you figure it out. But that's life.
So I think, I'm sorry, Don, I'm going to just jump in on that because I love everything that Terry's saying. I think it's great. I like that. It's awesome. But I'm not going to hit my fuse on this one either. And it's because I think the mental game, because I've learned in the past through doing endeavors similar to this. Okay, hey, I'm nearing that fuse. I've already identified a few of them. What can I do one step ahead of time in order to not bust that fuse? And so that's what I'm excited for about this one, is staying in the headspace where I can identify one more step from now, I'm going to be at that critical stage where the fuse is going to pop. Like, what can I do, you know? And all things considered too, though, Mother Nature, she's kind of uncanny. She's going to throw something. She very well will throw something during this 100-miler that's going to expose a different fuse for me on another circuit board that I'll have to manage. And when it comes up, just like Terry's saying, well, cool, I'm glad it popped. But I'm not quitting. I'm going to figure out how to solve this scenario, you know. But, I'm going there to stay a step ahead. And the other thing too is, like, I want to learn about my two companions that are on a course too, and try to help them just as much as I want them to help me, because sometimes we aren't aware of ourselves because we're so caught up sometimes that our fuse is about to pop, and you never know. Terry's gonna be like, hey Tosh, man, like, put some sunblock on, dude, like, your fuse is gonna pop in another hour. Like, oh shit, thanks, bro. And so I want to be there for those other two guys as well, so that Terry doesn't blow his fuse. At least he can put his finger on it. And Don, you know, if you can keep Don from falling asleep on the trail, in the middle of the trail, good, it's golden. But like, that guy just likes to curl up next to a tree, fall asleep for 2 hours and get a snoozer. So,
it's the strength of my running. You know, it is. I'm a great sleeper. And that's my strength in these long events. I agree with you guys. I don't, you know, what a great discussion, and it'll probably take a good 15 miles of the run, which I look forward to. Can you build a bigger fuse, or just do you get better at recognizing your fuse and manipulating the circumstances so you don't break it? So, yeah, do you get a bigger fuse, or are you just better at managing your own fuse? And that's where I think this sport is fascinating. And I lean more towards, you can't get a bigger fuse. You just manage your fuse better, and you recognize when you're getting close, and you start to do things to back off. I've got to get into the creek and cool myself down, because I'm approaching my fuse breaking unless I cool down. I need some fuel. I'm low on water. I'm running a little bit fast right now. These are all the things we need to adjust to protect our fuse. And the fun thing about three guys being out on the run is you got to leave the ego at the start line. You've got to be honest with yourself, and you absolutely need to take care of the others and watch their fuse and see when they need to change things. It's probably not when you need to change things. They don't all happen at the same time. But I think should we stick together, we'll need to be aware of, oh, Terry's fuse is about to go. We need to back off so Terry can get his stuff back together so then we can move forward, because it's not going to all happen at the same time. And I take Terry Tosh because we're not going to approach his fuse. He's 28. He's been training consistently since the 200s. So it's probably going to be me that's dragging behind, but I throw him under the bus. So that's my opinion on fuses. Scott.
Well, I was going to say that's the thing that I love about this sport is whether you, I think over time you understand what are the variables that get you to that fuse popping, but in order for you to get there, that fuse has to pop once or twice or many times. In my case, it actually has to pop a lot because I'm not that bright and I don't learn that quick. But to Tasha's point, that's the fun of these things is knowing how thick that fuse is and watching all the dials on the control panel to make sure that you're staying within the parameters or the limitations of the fuse. But if it does pop, you have to be able to have enough fortitude to say, that's okay, it popped. I need to sit down. I need to re-engage. I need to evaluate where I am instead of just throwing in the towel. If the fuse pops, that doesn't mean the race is over or the event is over. You can rebuild the fuse, even if it is taking some aluminum foil and twisting it up and putting it back in there and getting down the trail.
Yeah, you know,
and that's what I love about this sport.
I'm sorry, Scott. You know, what's always fascinated me is if we could trade fuses. What kind of runner would I be if I had Scott's fuse? You know, would I be out in front? Would I be further back? Or Tasha's fuse? What if I had Terry's fuse? What if Terry had my fuse? What kind of runner would he be? And so it really interests me to think about the fuse in that context.
And that's what I'm looking forward to, because I'm going to be doing some crewing with you guys too, is seeing how you guys, this is, and from my perspective, this is kind of unique. I don't think there's too many races where you start with three people and say, hey, we're going to go run this 100 miles together. It's an organized race. It's very well marked. And so you may leave your pal. But I think at least my expectation is that you're probably going to stick together the entire way because you're going to have such a good time together and you'll be able to see each other's fuses and watch each other and protect each other. I like that.
And I encourage other people, you know, to take a look at this and get inspired to go out and do their own race, whether it's rim to rim to rim, whether it's, you name the course, you know, dream your course up. You know, dial up your favorite runners that you've run races with or you train with or you just haven't seen in a while, like I did with Tosh and Terry, and said, hey, you guys want to run a race? And for the last few weeks, you know, it's been on our minds, and at least on my mind, and I'm looking forward to spending some time with these guys and having a lifelong memory. It's going to be hard to shake this one, guys. We'll create some memories that are burnt in from this event.
If you don't mind, let's bounce back to these funky looking Bigfoot shoes that Hoka was kind enough to send. But the Hoka 10-9, if you haven't seen this, you need to Google it and look at these shoes. A photo on the internet does not give it justice. I pulled mine out of the box and I looked at it and I said, Shaquille O'Neal doesn't have a sole this big. This thing is ginormous. I wear a size 10 and it looks like a size 22. And Don has run in the 10-9, and our buddy Bob Crowley has run in them, and they are telling me all these stories and I'm just very, very skeptical. Yeah. And then Don says, hey, let's go for a run. And I put these suckers on and we go down. It's a 1,000-foot drop over about a mile down to a river on a trail that we know. And he said, take it easy here. And then let's just play with this. And I had one of the, I was giggling like a schoolgirl. I was having so much fun in these. I've never run so fast down a hill in probably 10 years. they want to run. Have you guys tried them out yet?
I tried them on the day I got them, and kind of same with Scott. I was very skeptical, especially seeing how big they were. I went from running in Luna sandals to these, so quite different. But within a mile of wearing them, I was very pleasantly surprised. The toe box on them seems very spacious, almost similar to an Ultra. And they're very comfortable, even in the flats for me. I enjoyed wearing them. And then obviously in the downhills, they're very comfortable and they ran very well.
Yeah, I took them out of the box and I was just like, what are these? And I said, well, you got them. I didn't even come in from outside. I just put them on and I said, I got to just feel them. And they were interesting. It felt goofy. It felt uncoordinated, kind of like having clown shoes on, you know, and those heels protrude back quite far, a good 2 inches, if not 3, right from where your Achilles would stop, and that Achilles riser comes up, and these heels kick way back, and so I felt clunky. I walked around them in the house. I kept them on for about 4 hours, and you know, I didn't, no chafing or anything like that. It felt good. They were snug in the right places, loose in the toes, like Terry said. And you know what I like about them a lot is it's a very, very high back on those that come up high on the Achilles, which was interesting. And so I haven't run in them yet. I'm going to do the first run in them together on Monday morning. So we'll figure it out, man. I'm going to get new socks too, and just go for both of those things. Wear your new socks and your new shoes.
You know what they say: race day is the best day to try out new things, right, Tosh?
And we're going to have a spicy burrito for dinner the night before. It'll be a great, great run. Sounds like a lot of fun, guys. I couldn't think of two other guys that I'd love to go down this trail more. You guys are going to be a lot of fun. Super tough. Not worried about fitness level, mental toughness. I'm just going to go and have a great time. And I want to thank you for saying yes and coming out. It means a lot to me. And I think we're going to have a good time.
Yeah, excited. Thank you for asking, man. Appreciate it.
Yeah, thank you.
And I want to just throw in another plug for AJW. That's probably one of the disappointing factors here is he loves this race so much. He would have given you guys a 20 plus hour education on the history of the Western States Trail. And, oh, this is where this happened. Oh, on my second year running the trail, this is where, this happened. And, unfortunately you won't be able to have him, and because he's a good talker, you don't have to speak a whole lot with Andy around. So we're going to miss Andy out there. And we wish him a fast recovery.
All right, guys. So let's coordinate, after we hang up from this. And until then, Scott, we've got aid stations. We've got runner crew packets. We've got runner packets. We've got all kinds of things. This is a legit event. We've gone through and really put together. Well, I haven't. Michelle did. And she's the race director, and you'll meet her. And she's done a good job at making sure. Because if it was up to me, guys, all we'd have is a start date and a location. All right, that's all we'd have. And we'd sleep in our cars and we'd get up and we'd figure it out. But this has been put together very well. I think you'll be surprised at how much this feels like an actual legit event. So thanks for thanks for showing up. And we'll do a post. Yeah, go ahead.
I'm gonna go get some bibs from Joe's Crab Shack that you can wear.
Not that kind of bib.
Oh, I'm sorry.
All right, guys, let's go out and run.
Mas.